I'm Joe Healy. I'm the developer evangelist for Florida. Today we're going to be talking for a good 4 hours about Windows Azure. So we're going to start off with hopefully an open dialogue about cloud computing, where things like Azure fit in, or Azure, depending on where you're from. No, I don't know the correct pronunciation. But seeing where things fit in, basically, in your computing spectrum and where they might play. I'll tell you this right now, cloud computing isn't for all scenarios, so think about what you're seeing, where it might fit in, things like that. After I get done with the pretty extensive overview of Azure and hopefully some dialogues about where it fits for you, we're going to have my fellow developer evangelist all the way from North Carolina, so I like to call him one of my northern friends. Technically that's like a Yankee to a guy in Florida. All right, no, all right. He's going to be doing a lot with us on tables, queues, blobs, the whole Azure storage spectrum. He has a site running up in Azure. How many hits a day are you getting in it right now?
About 100,000.
Gets 100,000 hits a day in the Azure site. He's really designed it for structure and scalability in the cloud. Along with him, one of our local rock stars, or soon-to-be rock stars, Hervé Rogereau. Stand up, Hervé, wave. So Hervé actually does a lot with the South Florida SQL Server group, but he's also owns a LinkedIn group around SQL Azure, and he's working on a book on SQL Azure. So he's going to talk to us some about some of the patterns and practices and basic learnings and how to get started with SQL Azure. So that's some pretty exciting stuff. Let's see what else we got. We've got a few points I want to work through up here in this the slide deck. And let me turn off rehearsed timings or it gets really, really awkward. First thing on your USB keys, they've got a bunch of good stuff on there with little links you can go to get new content. I'll show you some links later as I'm working through stuff where you can go get more content as well. But just a great set of stuff. The other cool thing is, unlike a DVD, if you really don't want to follow any of these links, you now have a 2 gig USB key, so that worked out pretty good. Orlando.NET Code Camp. Saturday, March 27th in Orlando. They've got over 70 sessions. So just curious, how many of y'all attended South Florida Code Camp? All right, about 20% of the crowd. So pretty cool there. Free all-day event, all kinds of great topics. If you're a geek and you can't find something in there that interests you, well, all right, we got to work on our geek definition. But this is just interesting. What happens when we gave this kind of junk on screen to a good designer and we wound up with a really cool kind of logo like that? So that's a nice girl named Diane Leeper out of Lakeland did that for us. NAA South Florida, charity fundraiser for the geeks, by the geeks. Hervé, do you know the charity yet? All right, so they will be designating a charity. Hopefully it's not the Hervé Rogereau retirement fund. But there's a Geek Golf charity fundraiser they're doing, essentially trying to get more social into this thing. So a good opportunity there if you want to come out and have some fun. Now, this was interesting. I looked around. I tried to actually list in one slide the entire South Florida .NET community spectrum. So it turns out it's actually a lot easier just to get the user group leaders that are here to come up and give you a little 30-second plug on the stuff that they've got going. So we've got a number of the community leaders in the room, so we'll just kind of start it and work it down.
Name, who, what, when, where?
Hi, my name is Adam Cartwright with the Florida IT Server Group. We're a group designed for pros, by pros for pros. Our next event is on April 28th at the New Horizons. We'll be going over Hypervisor, AppLocker, and Branch Cache. You can register at www.fisg.us, and we do have a table outside for more information.
Brand new. That's our second meeting. Pretty cool to see IT Server having some cool stuff.
Maureen?
Thank you, Joe. Hi, I'm Maureen Homnick, and I'm the president of the Gold Coast User Group. We've been around for about 18 years, right, Bob? I think so, plus or minus. We actually have a meeting tonight up at the Embassy Suites in Boca on Silverlight 4.0. Shervin Shakibian, I know a lot of you guys know Shervin, will be presenting this evening at 6:30, and we welcome all of you. So that's at the Embassy Suites in Boca at 6:30. If you've got any questions, see me outside or go to homnick.com or the Gold Coast User Group site. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alex Funkhauser. I help lead the .NET Miami user group, the Silverlight user group, and the Silverlight Prism user group, among others. Silverlight user group meets on Miami Beach, and that's usually the third Thursday of the month. The Silverlight Prism user group meets at Carnival Cruise Lines, and that's the third Wednesday of the month. And the .NET Miami user group meeting, Joe's just going to shrug his shoulders on that one. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alex.
My name is Mark Knuppel, co-founder of the Azure users group here, ASFUG. We have a number of really good events coming up, and please attend them, because this is about a new normal. And what you're going to see today is about the start of that new normal. And if I could tell you one thing about what the cloud is doing for our society, it's going to be called a new internet. And we won't recognize it in 10 years. So get involved and be a part of this new community. You all have a unique opportunity ahead of you. Again, it's ASFUG. It's right on top. We have a meeting on the 18th here in Boca. And we have another one on the 24th at DeVry in Miramar. So be a part of this. And it can change your life. I'm telling you, this is like a new internet. It is like saying back in 1999, there's a thing called the internet or a thing called email. And it's going to be a big thing. Well, this is going to be a big thing. Get involved.
I'm really excited about that new group. I've got to get them to talk to some marketing people about their naming.
Alex came up with it.
Alex came up with it, for those of you on the remote. And one more Azure user group. I can't wait to hear this name.
My name is Bill DeLisi, and actually we're part of the same group that funny name that Mark just said. The difference is we're in Boca Raton area as opposed to the Miami area. So for those who live north of here, it's going to be on the 18th at the FAU campus. It's called the DeSantis Building, and we hope to see many of you there. Thanks.
All right, so a lot of good stuff happening. It's pretty – thank all the user group volunteer guys giving your own time to keep stuff going around here. Woo, all right. Hey. All volunteers, you know, these guys are doing it just because they got some kind of sick passion that makes them want to give up nights and weekends, so definitely appreciate that. Cool to see some Azure groups popping up, so basically if you want to learn more about that, those guys are a great avenue to go through, and we try and stay in contact with them and keep some fresh content flowing through as well. Some of y'all were watching earlier. The remote guys probably didn't see this, but there was a site going over that was a mapping site, and it was showing hits on coming in from various places around the world, and would just kind of pop them up on a Silverlight screen. That was worldmaps.net, Brian's implementation of a map cluster up in the cloud. So if you're interested in putting one of your sites into worldmaps.net, talk with Brian. It'd be a pretty cool thing to have, and it kind of lets you see, you know, hit aggregators and where things are coming from and neat stuff like that. But more people to get in it, the more the IPs get aggregated, and it really turns into a fun experience. Let's see what else. And now that's it. Enable good, control home, get all the way up, all right. Oh, I am in a live meeting, all right, let's go up here, all right. So, let's start talking about cloud. When we talk about cloud, you know, everyone's like, we always drew the internet as a cloud before, so isn't that just cloud? Not really the way people are talking today. So with cloud, there's a whole new model coming, and you've seen this in various flavors. Somebody out front was talking to me about like Salesforce.com as a cloud application. Someone was talking to me about BPOS, our office in the cloud kind of stuff, is a cloud application. But there's this whole model that is the idea of a
service running in the cloud that's a consumption-based model of computing. Now, this Azure session is very focused on developers and our Windows Azure and SQL Azure offerings. So when we get into that, we're basically talking about application hosting, database, storage services, all resident in the cloud. A key thing and a key tenet when we're talking about the Windows Azure platform is the ability to scale it. Whether that be I've got two application servers sitting out there and, oh, Lord, I got slash dotted and now I need 10 more servers to handle the load, scaling it out, planning for maximum capacity via the ability to scale out, or, which I consider more important, the ability to scale your capacity back and not pay for it anymore once you don't need it. So some pretty key tenets in there. Other things that we're seeing in the cloud, folks are looking for very high availability scenarios. They do not want downtime. Self-service management, I see stuff coming. I need to ramp up. I really don't want to have to go out and work with somebody to physically provision up stuff. My guys can take care of it. I want to scale it up all on my own. So some neat things happening in there, but that's kind of what we're talking about with cloud computing. Now, how does that fit in to what we've been doing and where are the breaks and what we've been doing before and some of the things we see coming now? So this is our traditional model, the on-premise server. I've got my rack of servers in my office. Very happy with that. I got dual pipes running in there. So I got maybe some broadband from AT&T, and I got some broadband from Time Warner or somebody else. I got my dual pipes in there. Oh, wait, if I got my own servers, I better make sure that thing's air-conditioned. I better have my own spare parts on hand. I better have some kind of software monitoring stuff for that. Be able to respond to alerts. This is hands-on. I'm installing my own software. I'm patching my own servers. I'm really owning every bit of that solution. I am responsible for everything there. The next break we get to is the hosted server scenario. So I'm going to rent a server in someone else's space. Perhaps they even give me the operating system software and stuff like that, but I'm basically just getting the infrastructure, the pipes, the network, the air conditioning, all that kind of stuff taken care of for me. At this point, I'm generally paying for capacity. And in the on-premise, I'm also paying for capacity. I put down a fixed amount of capital funds for something. I own that, and I have capacity of, you know, 20 gigabyte a month on the pipes, and I know my drive size is this much, and my computing capacity is this much, and I can scale up to this fixed level of computing. Now, when we get over in the cloud platform, this is where we, especially in Azure, we get over to a shared multi-tenant type infrastructure, which means there's a server out there. You don't really know where that server is. You got a general idea, but it's shared with a lot of other folks besides yourself. It's a dynamic virtualized Hyper-V environment. It's scalable, so you can scale it out when you need capacity, and you can also pull it back when the capacity is no longer needed. So very flexible on that. It's also pay-as-you-go model. So you're able to do things like month-by-month contracts with this. So I want Azure for 4 months, and then I'm just going to drop it. Or I'm going to spin up a new SQL database for 3 months, and then I'm going to drop it down. If you've ever priced things like SQL Enterprise, it's very interesting when you're looking at full client access licenses to SQL Enterprise. Well, you need a enterprise-wide SQL database just for 3 months. Maybe that's a scenario where you can fit that something in Azure or something like that. But it's pay-as-you-go, so a nice scenario there as well. One thing we're trying to do is Microsoft, we're going to have tools that address full spectrum. We got on-premise, we got solutions in the hosted, and obviously because of today, you'll see we got some solutions in the cloud as well. Now, this is, I guess this kind of falls in with that Azure group name. This is the AAS spectrum. Infrastructure as a service. So these are different things you may see floating around as things you can purchase. Infrastructure as a service we're going out there, we're buying services, storage, network. Get over platform as a service. This would be something where we're buying the OS, we're buying the application stack. In addition to server storage and network, perhaps they're even applying some application or OS and application stack management for me. They're monitoring it. They're backing it up. They are applying patches on the core OS for me and things like that. I actually have a virtual private server I run through a firm called Applied Innovations, headquartered out of Boca. This is really what they give me. They say, hey, Joe, here's your Windows server. Have fun with it. We'll take care of all the underlying stuff, and you just go on that. Now, we can also go a little further than that. We can get over the software as a service. So I'm a vendor. I'm a VAR. I've developed this really cool application, and I want to sell it out to various companies out there. So I'm going to write that application, and when someone wants it, I will deploy it on its own Azure instance, and I'll just sell them that instance. So I worry about the management of that application for them, and the whole infrastructure side is taken care of by the cloud computing spectrum. I don't worry about provisioning up servers. I don't worry about instance management or anything like that. It's all just kind of taken care of at that point. So the different things out there, infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. Just a bunch of different ways you can think about cloud computing. So easy one and a good case study is consumer to cloud as a cloud computing spectrum. There's a site out this winter called mychristmascatalog.com, and it was essentially an aggregator for all the other shopping sites out there. But it had a neat approach to it in that I could go in, say I'm shopping for my mother, so I'd put in basically age range 60 to 80, demographics, mean, light shiny things, site says, are you talking about a pit bull or your mother? All right, my career in stand-up didn't go well. All right, but anyway, it would come back with a list of gift recommendations. Now, these guys were getting jillions of hits during the Christmas time frame. If I were running that on-premise, a server room, I probably would have gone out and bought a couple quad core servers sitting there. I'd have a rack full of servers to handle the demand load. And then Christmas is over. Okay. What do I do with these servers now? All right, just shut down four of them. We'll run it on two, save a little on power. Oh, and we've gotten into a year contract for these great big old data pipes in there. Or maybe you're over on Rackspace. You're still contracted in for that. So what happened with Christmas Catalog? Was after Christmas, they scale it back, they leave a little stub site out there, and then they start working on the next season. Seasonal demand wave, very functional in the cloud. Also see this in enterprise to departmental areas, so branch location scenarios. Sometimes it's expensive for enterprises to spin up branch operations. So we've had a great success with large enterprises using Azure instances to spin up branch locations easily and quickly. We've also got the idea out here of enterprise to enterprise. So the cloud can establish a global, worldwide, shared data point for your enterprise using things like, Brian will show you later some stuff with our content delivery network and things like that. You can also use the Azure App Fabric, which it has an enterprise service bus component in it, to do instantaneous communications using the cloud as your backbone. Are we going to do our little application again? Well, I saw on Twitter you were really scared of it, so I've gotten more creative since then, so yeah. So we'll actually show some neat stuff there. Driving forces in here, talked a lot about the first three. We also see this a lot in the startup realm. I'm a startup. I've got a really cool application idea. If it gets going, I want to be able to turn it on and just ramp it up real easily. If it doesn't get going, I want to be able to fade it and kill it. So Azure can become a good place for startup or experimental initiatives. Seasonal businesses obviously can work in there. You really want some high capacity, high availability computing platforms in there, but you don't want to invest a lot in the IT space. You don't want to run racks or routers. You don't want to, even use an offsite hoster. Great. You can knock down some significant IT costs by putting your apps up in the cloud. So it can give you a competitive edge up there. This is just the platform service guarantee. These are our SLA levels. So you can see we're shooting for some pretty high goals there, basically 99.9 across the board, and even better in the connectivity areas. But generally this is meant to be a super, super high availability area. When we start talking about how things actually go in the cloud, you'll see that it's built for a failover. It's built for automatic self-healing, for watching instances of your application running in the cloud. If one's having a problem, fade it out, bring up a new one.
the databases are all high availability SQL clusters up there that you actually don't have to set up yourself. You push your database out and there's automatic backup replicas with instantaneous replication in the cloud. Very geared towards high availability. So this slide is actually one of my favorites. So it kind of shows what are some of the optimal workload patterns up in the cloud. So on and off scenarios, we are expecting in this 1 week, we're going to have an application alive. We want to spin it up, and when it's done, we just want to rip that thing down. So on-off patterns, growing fast. So that's your startup scenario. We are going to put something out there. We think it may go. It may get really big. So we want to be able to scale up and handle the growth, or rather scale out and handle the growth of that new emerging application. Unpredictable bursting. You know, this is the scenario. We've got an application out there. Sometimes we may get slashdotted. We may have an unexpected spike on it. We want to be able to handle that without investing in new servers that are going to be sitting there potentially not being used the rest of the time. And then predictable bursting, things like seasonality. So those fit in real well into optimal patterns. This is one thing I'll say is that the cloud isn't for everyone, but if you have these kind of scenarios, you may want to think about, can the cloud help you? So, generally, if some of the things we're seeing in the early stage game, if you're a nimble business, you're willing to play with some early adopter stuff, because, yes, this is a version one on the platform, but you also see we've got a lot of neat stuff happening with it. You're looking for some kind of strange competitive advantage to get you going, we can help you there. We've also got some stuff going. Everyone thinks Microsoft is only going to be .NET. I've personally deployed PHP up into the cloud, 5.2.something. We've got Java up in the cloud. You can do any of the dynamic languages. So regardless of your language offering, there's pretty much a spot for it up in the cloud. One of our premier case studies, and I'll show you where you can go look at some case studies later, is Domino's. And they use this to scale up for the Super Bowl. And they used it to handle overflow Super Bowl demand, and then after the Super Bowl, they shut it down. But they were Java Tomcat in the cloud. So nice picture there when you read the case study. So here's just one case study that's real interesting, and I'm pretty familiar with this one, because it's out of Tampa. But what happened was Outback wanted to run a Blooming Onion campaign in Facebook. So I don't know if any of y'all are my friends on Facebook, but you saw I friended Outback, and I got a coupon for a free Blooming Onion. Yeah, like I needed that. But anyway, so what happened was about 6 months before Outback ran their campaign, one of their competitors tried a similar thing. Friend us on Facebook, get a free appetizer. They ran their campaign. I think their servers lasted about 2 hours before they imploded in a puff of greasy electric smoke and just gridlock. All right, there goes all that money. Even more important was the opportunity wasted to collect and gather things like email information and stuff like that through a campaign like that. You know, frustrating for their execs. So these guys were very concerned about the ability to scale their application. So the Facebook app connected out to ASP.NET MVC, which then connected out to the Azure backend storage. When they ran their campaign, basically they watched the measurements going on their Azure spaces. They were actively adjusting servers up to handle the threshold. And then when the campaign tapered off, they shut their capacity down. And they still left some of it up, but they took it down from their highest peak. On-off scenario, not totally off. Pretty neat picture there. Managed to collect over 1 million emails in a very, very short time frame. Real neat win. Now, a couple of my favorite people were involved in this. So those of you know Jeff Barnes, he's a Miami Microsoft guy. He was the architect evangelist on this. Pretty cool guy if you ever get a chance to go to anything he's hosting. Jim Zimmerman out of Tampa works for a firm called Thuzi. He's their CTO, and he's an ASP.NET MVP, and he was instrumental in this as well. This is one that's fairly close to home. So this is up on the Windows Azure case study site. So City of Miami has a 311 system. Basically, it's for reporting on non-emergency incidents to the police department. So, you know, graffiti, trash can gets knocked over, stuff like that. You know, it's not something you really want to call 911 for, but definitely there. You know, you want to get it reported. So the idea here was they wanted some mapping system. It's going to require some significant resources to do it. They also got a typo in there, but they didn't want to deal with long-term hardware procurement. State and local government, so I've heard, you know, buying new hardware can be an interesting experience. Software as a service, so it's a little different on the accounting. So that was one of the factors in there. So now they've got an infinitely scalable 311. Because it's in the cloud, it's a hosted scenario, it's easy to move stuff around, it's disaster-proof, pretty important for us Florida people to understand that one. They partnered with a Tallahassee-based firm called ISC on this, and ISC actually provides tiled data layers over the Bing Map solution that they use. So let's just take a look at this real quick. I should still have it up in the browser. And this is live, the Miami311.cloudapp.net system. So you can see the URL up there, or maybe you can't. So those of you who use Windows 7, WinKey Plus lets you zoom in. And now we can see, oh, got a little funky window going there. We'll move Mr. Magnifier over. But Miami311.cloudapp.net. And this is a live system, so I can move over. And I can see, I don't know what happened there. Let's see what happened there. Come on, give me a push pin. There we go. Someone's garbage container was damaged. So they're really mad about this. We don't want that on 911. But this went in the system. They're tracking non-emergency incidents. Some of this is keyed in by the 911 operators. They're also able to get in and you know, search on them and do things like that. But this is for tracking all the 311 calls. So you can tell it's in Azure by the cloudapp.net URL up there. You're able to do your own domains up there, but this one, when you see cloudapp.net, that one is Azure. Azure native domain. We're going to see how to do that. Anyone use 311 yet? Nope. All right, everyone go out. Hey, one guy, all right. That's your trash can, ain't it? All right. Oh, man, they didn't put the swag out or I give them a hat. Remind me, you get a hat for having used the 3111 once we get the swag out on the break. It is your application? Oh, dude, that rocks. All right, yeah, I'd love to talk with you after this. Yeah. No se habla mucho español, but you are muy grande hombre. So there you go, baby. So he's got a live Azure app in the cloud. Oh, man, if I'd known you were here, you would have been wearing the mic right about now and demoing this site. But this is pretty cool, and, you know, just a really sweet one. And it's also neat that they partnered with another Florida firm to do this. So really good Florida technology picture there. And this is super cool stuff, and just seeing it on the case study site is awesome. All right. Yeah, if that's your site, you definitely get a hat. So if you're interested in more case studies, WindowsAzure.com. You can go up there. Obviously, City of Miami's up there. I've heard of some other good things happening in this area and on some Azure stuff, but hopefully we'll get more of those up there. But you can go up and drill in, read the scenarios and the reasons why on each case study. So there's some pretty sweet stuff happening up there. So these are just some of the companies that we've worked with on Azure down the sidebar. So you can see we've got some major names playing in there. If you don't know CCH, they're actually online tax preparation. But, you know, just all kinds of neat scenarios that we've seen. A lot of it is really dealing with a lot of variable demand scenarios. It's also dealing with scenarios where capital expenditures become pretty difficult for them, and the service expenditure is cheaper or it's easier to get. So, you know, some neat things to look at when you go up there and play. Now, so where is the app running? He's got this app. Where is it running? So this is the point I always go. I don't remember all six of the names, but it is Chicago, San Antonio, Dublin, Amsterdam, Hong Kong, or Singapore. So when y'all deployed your app, what did you choose for your data center? Just let it go, all right. But when you deploy your app, you can actually you can pick a geo-affinity area. So you can say, I want this in Chicago. I want this in San Antonio. I want it in Singapore. And it was interesting. I was talking with the Azure team, and I said, why would some companies want to go in Singapore over U.S.? And it turns out Patriot Act becomes a big requirement there. And folks do not want to host some data in the U.S. due to the Patriot Act. So great. The lesson there is to check out legal implications around your data and see where you want it to be hosted if there are any. Something neat to check there, but definitely lets you see that. Now, this is photos of a Microsoft data center. Ground floor in this data center, the Chicago data center, can handle up to 56 of these big old truck containers. So basically they back in a semi-truck with a container on it and pull it off. Steve Ballmer just gave a speech at the University of Washington. For that day, they brought in a big old truck container and just dropped it off there. Once it's in, they hook up the HVAC, they hook up the networks, they then hook up the power, and they're pretty much in gear. 56 containers. Each container holds 2,500 servers. Inside of that, each one's a virtualized Hyper-V environment. Ton of virtual machines running inside of each server. So pretty neat picture there when you do that.
What hardware are you using?
Varies. It's across the board. You know, different scenarios, but we're not going to submit out any one particular deal there because it's just cloud. Doesn't really matter. Now, what does matter, and I'll show you this on the sizing, is when you're deploying, as far as your virtual machine goes, you can pick your number of cores, you can pick your RAM size, you can do a lot of stuff like that. That becomes real important. Also, we'll get to this under deployment. You look at the layout here, and there's this one big container there. When I deploy my Azure app up, by default, I really recommend you go up with at least two instances. Now, it doesn't make sense that if I have two instances going, they all go into that one container there on the right, and then all of a sudden, for some reason, that container goes up in smoke, and both your servers go down. So the deployment is actually smart enough that it distributes the loads out across multiple servers and multiple containers and multiple network boundaries up there. So that becomes real important. You know, you want stuff to not be all hobbled together. And behind the scenes, there's a lot of that happening up there. So that was cloud up to this point and a little bit on Azure. Any questions so far, anything like that? I know the movie theaters are dark and painful. If there's a dialogue, we want it to happen.
I have a question. If you're, let's say, the application that you're hosting on the cloud requires licensing, every instance would require a license. That's still...
That's up to you. So the question for those of you who aren't aware, we got a live meeting going on. This is actually streaming out. Wow, we have 63 attendees on the live meeting, so that's pretty cool. The question was software licensing in the cloud. How do you deal with that? That's your responsibility as far as that. The neat part is what you're not dealing with is software licensing from us. So you're not dealing with the SQL Azure high availability clustered license. You're not dealing with 15 Windows Server 2008 licenses to match your 15 instances. You're not dealing with end-user SQL client CALs when you're going against the cloud. So those kind of licenses are taken care of. With your stuff, if you're deploying licensed software into an Azure instance, first off, Brian Hitney actually came up with the best definition of the rule I have. You know, the stuff you can use in the cloud is stuff that's X-copy deployable. So you got to watch out on the components there. You may want to talk to your vendor, make sure they work in the Azure cloud. But typically, if it's an X-copy deployable component, it's going to work in the cloud. And then you're going to have to manage your own licensing on third-party stuff at this point. Great question. Thank you very much. Nice shirt. He's wearing, for those of you remote, he's wearing a SQL Saturday shirt, this Hawaiian color. All right. Sure. Okay, so I'm going to repeat the question for the remote guys. Question was scaling the website. Say we get slash dotted, is it automatically scaled up for us? At this point in time, there's no automatic scale up, but you do have management tools that are up in CodePlex you can pull down to see your performance spikes and all that. If you detect you're going under load, basically, I'll show you this when I deploy, you can go up to the cloud, change your configuration file. Say it's defaulted to 2 instances and you want to go up to 6, you change it from 2 to 6 and then save it, and it will start spinning up new instances for you right at that point. Typically, your new instances are up in 2 to 3 minutes. They're working on management tools for that. You may want that, you may not, so it'll be up to you. But I know that's on the plans for the future. I'm just not sure timelines or anything like that. Slashdot.org is basically this, it's a kind of a website out there where people post flame bait. So they're annoyed at something, and then an article goes up there, and typically whatever gets slashdotted gets about 100,000 hits in 1 hour. Or a million hits in 1 hour. And there's another one called The Register that's the same way. And if it hits that site, you're going to get a lot of hits. It'd be like putting your website on the front page of the Miami Herald, except it's bigger. Well, I'm sorry, what? Yeah, I'd rather see it there than the National Enquirer. So, security. So basically, this is a fully secure environment. The Global Foundation Services, and I'll show you some links to it when I get back to my computer. That's the underlying foundation services of Microsoft Online Services is ISO 27001:2005 certified. Basically, it's been audited and all that for physical access, things along those lines. So it's as locked down as anything can get. And these are all hands-off data operations centers, unless it's somebody going in to replace hardware or something like that. There's no physical access to the computers. Very, very secure environment. Survived a ton of audits, and we're working on a bunch more certifications. It's a website called globalfoundationservices.org that describes our security infrastructure. When I get back to the front, I kind of move up here because it's so dark up there. Just make me pull that website up, and I'll show you. And I'll also show you some places you can get more Azure information than what's on your USB keys. Well, for backups in the cloud, basically we're backing it up for you. So if you dealt in with high availability backup scenarios, basically when you have a multi-SQL Server cluster in there, how do you do a backup? You do a system disk. So we're handling the backups in the cloud for you, which protects you against scenarios like disk failure, database going corrupt and things like that. The backup scenarios that are a little tougher to deal with are, hey, somebody issued delete star from that kind of stuff. I would be using a data sync tool, or I'd be using the SQL migration wizards, which they're going to show you. Those kind of scenarios are a data error scenario, and that you've got to take on yourself. And there are some vendors working on third-party backup solutions. I haven't seen any of those pop yet. Woo, wow, all right, this is a good crowd. Ma'am in front. Recoverability is under our control for data restore scenarios. Data failure, you should not see because you've got a high availability SQL cluster under there. Primary server goes down, it immediately rolls to one of your backups, which has a simultaneous type replication going. So it replicates, as soon as you put data in, it's replicated out to the back servers. That front server goes down, it rolls over to the backup server, and a new server starts spinning up. Yeah, you have to go through us, and we'd have to specifically talk about the scenario. If you're after, I need rows 50 to 100 of this one particular table, you're not going to get that level of recovery. So, yeah, we can talk offline on that scenario. Does the App Fabric security integrate with the existing Active Directory yet? I know it's in the...
Yes?
I believe so, yes, Joe. Oh, all right. Sorry, I guess my mic is
Brian, who's going to talk about App Fabric, and he's going to talk about some of the identity stuff, yes. So he'll be getting more into that. But that's a separate portion from the applications. It's actually this thing called the App Fabric, and there's that's where the securities handle is, federated identity scenario in there. Way in the back. You're losing everything. You can't touch the servers. You can't get in and run commands. There are some PowerShell commandlets available geared towards our management stuff, but you're not going to be able to go low on the system. You're hands off on the server. You're hands off on the SQL server. Your access to the SQL server is basically I can configure ports and I can issue DDL, DML, and SQL commands against it. So basically create tables, create users, create stored procedures, that kind of thing. But your CRUD at that point. Yeah, that's part of the security infrastructure. It's also part of patch management. You don't patch your own servers. We do all the patching and stuff like that. So all the operating system is on a consistent level out there. Yep.
Is there any notification?
Not at this point, there's no notification that you're getting crushed.
So someone actually physically has to monitor it.
Right, or using the management APIs, you could write something. Like I said, a lot of those tools are being developed right now, but nothing's out yet. And I think Brian's going to show some interesting stuff during his session about manageability as well. Cool. It's called SQL Management Studio R2. Notice I said R2. So right now, basically the visual management is you can see it connect to the server, and then you get to issue SQL commands against it. So there's none of this visual table designer stuff or anything like that going on. Basically, at this point, it's all issuing scripts against the server to do stuff. It's back. We've gone retro. Takes out the wimps anyway. All right. So communication with certain chunks like Azure storage and the websites and all that are all HTTP. You can define the port, and I'll show you where you can do that. When you're talking to the SQL server, it's TCP TDS streams. So a little different scenario there. But you can also have WCF's roles that you can spin up that are worker roles, and there you can define your own communication protocol as well. Basically, TCP is where you want to go. I'm not 100% up on the UDP, but jhealy at microsoft.com. Pop me a question, and I'll see if I can find that answer. Woo, that was geeky. I like that one. All right, we got a couple others. Fun. Good question. For the what analysis? They're using map.net for the geospatial, which is ISC. And correct me if I'm wrong. As far as the analysis, they got a planar data, and it builds tile layers, and they plot stuff. You want City of Miami guy want to pop in on that one?
Hey, Joe, can you just repeat the question?
The question was, what is City of Miami using for their geospatial analysis? And I know one of the tools that they're using, but I don't know the full spectrum. Luckily for the remote people, we have the City of Miami guest star who was hiding on the front row until he made the mistake of piping up on this. So... Yeah, the whole geospatial.
So we actually convert the data into X and Y coordinates and store it as shape files inside the Azure storage. And then we feed the Azure storage into the WCF. The WCF consumes the Azure storage, and that gets presented through Silverlight with a Bingmap integration. So that's why you have to convert it, get your shape files, get your X and Ys, your geometry gets in there, and then we consume it through there.
And since we're live broadcasting, go ahead and state your name for future rock stardom.
Conrad Salazar, City of Miami Project Manager.
He's the guy that was in the case study I was reading. So, wow, all right, this is cool. So we'll get into SQL. When we're talking about SQL Azure, and I haven't hit this slide yet, but SQL Azure really is just CRUD. We say it's based on SQL 2008, but it's really create, read, update, delete. One of my favorite features of SQL 2008 is Geospatial Support, but guess what's not in Azure? Geospatial Support, right. Yet. They are working on it, and that's one of the hot ones that's coming, yeah. So there's features being added in. If you get up in the Azure forums, you can see a lot of that stuff. I actually don't like to broadcast it because then if one doesn't come, I get yelled at. So kind of cool on that, but he said it, so it's good. And for those of you remote, we don't know who said it. All right. Can your existing application speak to Azure? Absolutely. So one of the examples Hervé is going to show is a non-Azure-based application talking to SQL Azure. Hervé is also going to talk about why this might not be a good idea, but might be a good idea. And if you're going to do it, some of the things you need to think about if you do it. The dark people. All right, way there in the super dark corner. All right. Framework in the clouds, 3.5 SV1. That's one thing. When we roll 4 will not be immediately supported in the cloud. It is being worked on, but it's not immediately supported in the cloud. I reckon it's going to be supported for a very, 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 very long while. So, yeah. SQL reporting is not supported in the cloud, running in the cloud. You can actually set up SQL reporting services to talk to your cloud data, but Hervé will probably talk to you a little bit about some strategies on why you might not want to do that, or you might. There's actually ingress and egress charges when you cross boundaries in the cloud, and it's microcents on the gigabyte, but it can still add up, so you got to be cautious about your strategy up there. Woo, all right, out far corner. We're striving for that not to happen. We've got a pretty aggressive
question.
Oh, so the question was every now and then when a Windows server pack comes out, it blows something up. Shouldn't happen in the cloud. You're coding into the framework. We got pretty aggressive test suites, so it's going to be caught real quick.
You can also specify your OS version. I'll have a quick demo of that, hopefully, if we have time. And so if there's major functionality that gets released, for example, .NET 4 will likely be in a new OS version. You can target that or target something different, and, that'll be up to you.
Wicked. Okay, down here there's one more.
You sort of addressed some of it, but you mentioned this is pay-as-you-go. So when these spikes come in, you're going to see.
Right. Yes. So the question was, I mentioned this is a pay-as-a-go type service. When you see charges come in, you're going to see, when you scale yourself up, you're going to see charges go up. If you're crossing bounds with your application, you'll see your charges go up. And Brian's got a pricing slide he's going to pull up, but yeah, when you cross bounds, there's ingress, egress charges, and those you do have to watch those. Sir. If you were to be creating a table and you weren't creating indexes, no matter whether you're running in SQL Azure or you're not running in SQL Azure, you're going to want to create indexes. So you can still do plan. If you're sitting in 2008 R2 Studio and you do a Control L to show your execution plan, it's going to show your execution plan. You have those kind of tools still available. What you don't have is you don't have right now a little enterprise studio to give you a visualization of all this stuff for creating tables and things like that. But show plan's still up there. You can still create indexes. You can still create secondary indexes. When we get to, I got a real good slide in just a little bit that shows what is supported and what isn't. Actually, it shows what isn't supported and then some things you may just need to read the doc on before you proceed. But the majority or baseline database capability is supported up there as far as the database. Now, when we talk about DBAs, I've always viewed two different worlds in DBAs. There's the DBAs that are getting in there and installing the CD and installing the server and going through that wonderful SQL 2008 install, which takes about 4 hours, and then configuring all that stuff and then setting up your high availability cluster. And then there's a line there, and there's the application level DBA who deal with database structure, efficiency around table layout and design, and things like that. With Azure, we're in that second level camp where you really focus on your application, how the database is structured and things along those lines, making sure things are efficient, making sure you've got efficient practices up there in the cloud, monitoring your ingress, egress, things like that. Cool. Woo! All right. How many questions was that?
That was a lot, and I was also typing like crazy on live meeting. We had a bunch of questions coming across as well. But
yeah, if you get a chance, do a notepad with some of those, and I'll keep blabbing, and then I'll try and write down questions when you're up there. So we'd like to just keep track of the super cool questions we get, and then helps us dig more into it as well.
Most were yelling at you to repeat the question.
Repeat the question. They are so. Oh, man, they're tough. All right, this one. We got 66 people apparently yelling at me because I don't repeat the question enough. So good stuff there. But this is kind of your Azure spectrum. So see all the blue stuff? That's Azure. So you've got your Windows Azure execution kind of framework up there. That really is table storage. It's application execution, things like that. Then, as a separate service up there, there's SQL Azure. Just because you're using Windows Azure, you don't have to use SQL Azure. You can actually point your stuff back to an off-premise SQL database if you want. We've got another layer up there that's the Azure App Fabric. It used to be called .NET Service Bus. Since there's remote people in there, I won't talk about the App Fabric naming issues, but I'm sure Brian will. We got a service bus out there. So this is a big cloud-based service bus, enterprise service bus. And then we've got access control services rolled into that App Fabric as well. The white stuff is non-Azure-based things. So you could have your own web services, your own applications, don't have to be web apps, going out there and talking into Windows Azure, maybe hitting the storage areas up there, going out and talking to SQL Azure, maybe using it as a database. Basically, you've got a lot of flexibility. You don't have to use all the parts of our cloud platform to make it work. So we'll kind of roll it from the bottom or the middle. Under hosting, you're able to put up applications. We're not putting virtual machines up there. Azure is not let's shove a virtual machine in the cloud. Azure is I have an application I want to publish in the cloud and then manage. We can put up web services, so WCF services that sit there and listen for inbound stuff. We can have worker roles up there. A good example of this is something that sits there and watches an Azure queue up in the cloud and then picks something off of that and processes it and then rips it off the queue. So a nice scenario there. I'll show you when we get up there, we've got a real easy way of doing upgrades up there. You're able to have your primary application running. You can deploy up into a staging area in the cloud, see how it reacts in the cloud, because sometimes things may behave a little differently in production than in your dev environment. And then you're able to click a button and just switch the cloud-based staging area with your production deployment. Now, when we look at our data storage options, a lot of great questions floating around on data storage. SQL Azure is obviously our relational data storage up there. I got a couple more slides on that, so don't start beating on me yet on that one. I know you're going to, but with the Windows Azure data storage, we got blobs up there for unstructured data storage, binary stuff. So you hand in a key, and then you got big old area that you can just shove stuff into. Tables are semi-structured, so think of you got a dictionary, it's a key, and it's a string. You can structure that string however you want. You can use XML to do like fake fields in there, but basically it's dictionary lookup in there. We've got queues, FIFO queues, so if you've used MSM queue or like AS400 data queues or anything like that, MQ series, you're familiar with how queues work, but basically they're things you put stuff in, first out, off you go. See the bottom one? All right, so the question, yeah, we'll get to that. Great question. So the yes and no. I'll come to that on the
question is.
Tell them wait. Brian's going to talk about the logging mechanism in his session. So the question was, he uses Log4Net. Is there something he can use for logging up in the cloud? Brian's got some of that in his session. The first question was, I need a file system drive up there in the cloud. How can I do that? And you don't get a like file system where you can get out and, say, get into your C Windows directory and rip out system files or anything like that. But if you've got an application that's seriously file system-based, you can use something that used to be called xDrive, now it's called Azure Drives, that actually enables you to go out and create, using blob storage, a simulated NTFS drive in the cloud. So it gives you real good compatibility if you've got applications going forward. Cool. Great questions. Thank you. I've had about three of these. That was the best round of questions we've ever gotten, so thank you all much, guys. All right. Now, under Azure Tables, basically Azure Tables are cheap, so they're part of base Azure. They're scalable. You can go up to 50 gig in your tables, and durable, you know, nice big chunky areas up there. What this doesn't do, you can't have a relationship between your tables. No referential integrity, none of this stuff, none of the good stuff of the database is built in because it's very simply tables. You start doing things like referential integrity and all that, you're starting to drift over in the SQL world. Okay. Now, SQL, I talked about this a little. SQL Azure is our core database functionality. We've got a nice subset, a SQL Server sitting there. Notice I said subset. We've got databases available in two gorgeous sizes for you, 1 gig and 10 gig. They can be no bigger than 10 gig, but you can't have one as small that you pay for as 1 gig. There are some options coming in the future for different sizes, but right now this is what you got. Now, that doesn't mean you can only have one 10 gig database. You can have multiple 10 gig databases if you had a bigger load. You can work with a scheme called sharding there if you need to distribute your data in the cloud across more than a 10 gig scenario. We also have a management tool. So SQL Management Studio R2 is your management tool for SQL Azure. They're actually enhancing it as we speak now to have more Azure support in it. We've also got SQL data synchronization tools available. And off on CodePlex, there's actually a tool called SQL Data Migration Wizard, which enables you to migrate, say, from SQL Server to Azure and gives you warnings if you do anything bad, and also allows you to migrate from Azure to SQL Server and allows you to migrate Azure to Azure and things like that. So great little tool to check out as well. Now, this is the one that will interest the back row, which they can't read because they're in the back row. See, the angry guys sit in the back row, and then they can't read the slides, but all right. Good news for you, if you go to my website, devfish.net, I think it's the latest blog entry or second latest blog entry. All these slides are already uploaded. They're in the download section. I've got some scripts up there that are demo scripts against SQL Azure, and I've got my overview deck and my data decks up there as well, so you can check that out. There's also some additional resources up there. I'll show you that in a second. So you don't have to remember all this, but some things in here are really annoying under the not at all. First one for me, spatial data and indexes. Did not like that. All the geospatial, no good. Things like SQL CLR. So a lot of people are doing some neat tricks with floating point numbers and stuff like that in the CLR, getting some blazing performance in SQL 2008. That's not there. User-defined types, got to watch that. SQL Service Broker. Basically, if it's outside the bounds of what we think of as normal database operations, then it's not supported. On the partially supported, very rarely do I hit things up here that burp on me, but every now and then you will, and then you go up to the Azure stuff and you read it and you say, oh, look, this one keyword wasn't supported up there. We can't do that. So just, I wouldn't say that's an area for caution, but there may be a minor differentiation between what's supported and what's not. I mean, what's supported in Azure and what's supported over in regular SQL 2008. Now, the Azure App Fabric is, we alluded to this already, this is our service bus up in the cloud. We can use it to communicate between applications. Brian and I will show you an example of an application from the SDK that does a cloud-based chat application using the service bus. Also has our access control service in there and provides management APIs that we can get in and go with up there. Now, the Fabric itself, so we got App Fabric. And Brian yelled at me yesterday over this one because I accidentally said the wrong thing, and he was right. But we also have the Cloud Fabric. So you're getting fabriced out about this point, and I haven't even brought in Dev Fabric. But the Fabric is the controller that when we deploy something up, spins up our instances. It makes sure that they're deployed in the right places. It watches and makes sure that if we have multiple instances up there, if one's failing out, a new one is spun up. Over on the SQL side, it takes care of all those issues for us with, hey, this database is starting to fail out for some unknown reason. Let's pull that backup copy up and make it the primary and start spinning up a new backup cluster. So it takes care of a lot of that kind of server management stuff for us. Also handles things like load balancing and DNS, scaling up and down the services, those kind of deals. So that's where a lot of the power of the cloud comes from, is right there. Now, you're a developer. Oh, yeah, the first thing you want to do is go spin up a live cloud instance where you're paying for deployment and start debugging against that and get your infinite loop going, and next thing you know, you're 10 bucks out. Basically, we have a dev fabric that's installed when you install the Visual Studio tools for Windows Azure. Now, I said you could use it with other dev environments like PHP and Java and things like that. If you don't want to install the Visual Studio tools, you go install the Azure SDK, and it will give you the local dev fabric as well, so you can do that. But what it does is it gives us a cloud operational environment for our local machine. It gives us Azure storage environment on our local machine. And if you're going to work with SQL, you can actually simulate Azure SQL against your local SQL Server database. So it gives you a local dev environment to work on that's fairly powerful and a lot of fun. Talked about this. So there are a couple other approaches out there. The two big boys on the block besides us is Amazon and Google. Amazon's basic model is deploying a virtual machine up into the cloud. So we are deploying applications. I'll show you that in a second. They are ask you to deploy a big virtual machine up there. So different issues you'd have to worry about on that. Google's actually more similar to our approach. You're deploying an application up there. They allow their applications to be written in Python and Django, and then you have your choice of Python and Django. So, okay. Anyway, but you're deploying into a virtual environment with them, a little virtual application environment similar to ours. So, you know, there's just showing you the two other big boys out there have a little different environments as well. Now, to get started with this, go to Microsoft.com, Windows Azure, Black Developers. They'll give you a little walkthrough installing the tools and all those kind of things. And you'll wind up with a little local dev fabric there. You'll have to go up to the Azure Platform portal, and I'm going to show you this. There, you're able to provision, deploy, promote, you know, set up your Azure applications in the cloud. You can create storage. You can create your SQL instances. You can find out your connection settings to get to everything. So we'll take a good look at that once we get going. And this just tells us about the SDK. Like I said, it gives you the local dev fabric, local storage services, local debugging support. There's no SDK required for SQL Azure. Again, you're going to be working against your local SQL Azure space. Now, one thing, to use the Visual Studio tools for Azure, you do need to have IIS installed on your box. So just watch out for that one. If you don't have IIS, you're going to have to install it. 6.0? Azure work with 6.0? The Azure SDK? Oh, Visual, sorry. Yeah, I was on IIS. No, Visual Studio 2008 Pro and up. So there's a couple different roles we'll work with in a second. Web role, basically HTTP serve. We're using it to push pages out there. It's our web server. We've also got the option of doing worker roles. So these are things that can monitor queues. They can also act as service endpoints. Any of the stuff up there can be written in other languages. There's some great tutorials out there on how to do it. If you're working with a particular language, you can't find a thing on how to do it, I'll show you that. We've also, let's see on this one, Web and worker roles, they can be HTTP or HTTPS. You can put up your own 509 certificates to work with them. So, you know, it gives you a nice SSL security layer if you're looking for that. The Azure Client Storage has REST APIs available to it. Those of you who've played with ADO.NET data services know this is a way, essentially, you can send a specifically formatted HTTP request against a storage object and get a result back. Now, that being said, you can't just put one in a browser and go because there are specific headers that need to be sent up. There's a couple samples out there, but I'll show you the address endpoints and how you work with that stuff. Now, if you're working in Visual Studio 2008 and you do File New Cloud Project, you wind up with a dialog like this. So I can this is my empty cloud project at this point. Use the arrows, you add in things, so I can add in an ASP.NET role. I could add in a worker role. CGI web role, in this case, would be used for doing like a PHP app in the cloud. So you do a CGI web role, and then you put the PHP runtime in there, enable native code execution, and boom, you got PHP in the cloud. So pretty cool picture with that. Now, if you go, and I'm sure some of you all are working around with Visual Studio 2010 right now, but if you go into 2010, we get the same stuff we had before, but you also get a few new templates, like ASP.NET MVC2 in the cloud. And in the worker role, this one's pretty cool. F-sharp is our parallel programming language based on Haskell. And you get a F-sharp worker role to work in the cloud. So if you're doing sophisticated matrix manipulation, things like that, you can get F-sharp up there. So let's just take a look at this. Okay. Now, first thing was I mentioned wanted to show you all where you could get some resources. So if we come here, second link in this wonderful looking blog, which, yes, is being overhauled. The downloads are up there for my PowerPoints and this DF Azure Zip, but I'm an information pack rat. I get these URLs, and I just can't throw them away. So I was keeping them in Outlook for a while. Then I moved them over to OneNote. But what I found was I was continually re-emailing people my collections of OneNotes, and it got really annoying. So I started up a wiki. And here's some links to various categories in my wiki. But if you just go to this URL, dfwiki.devfish.net, and then we click on Technology, and you come into the Azure category. All kinds of stuff in here, Azure General, Azure and PHP, Azure App Fabric, things like that. If we go into Azure General, I want some resources to learn. Okay, there's about 12 resources that are all free to help you start learning. So links to the Azure SDK, MSDN Magazine issue on cloud computing, Azure Training Kit, Quick Start Portals, things like that. Blogs and wikis, links. If you're looking at using Eclipse, Java, PHP, or Ruby, here's the SDKs for those. So just a lot of stuff you can get into. The place I'd suggest you really start, after giving me a few hits on my wiki, because my boss really likes getting hits on my website, you know, that's that thing, is you install the Azure SDK. And when you do that, what you're going to wind up with is Windows Azure Training, Windows Azure Platform Kit. You can run the default if you like working through the menus, but we got a big thing on presentations if you want to redeliver some presentations. These are my favorite. These labs in here are all labs that take somewhere between 1 hour to 8 hours to work through, and just drill through these labs. So like on Visual Studio 2008, how would I do MVC? Exploring Windows Azure Storage, Intro to SQL Azure. This one's good. People always ask, how do I migrate databases to and from Azure? So this thing goes in using BCP and SSIS to migrate data back and forth to Windows Azure. So definitely get in here, check this out. Lots of cool stuff in here in this training kit. Once you're done with the training kit, you'll be pretty good to go. Probably have more questions, but definitely get you going. Okay, now the next thing we're going to do is we're going to build the cloud application and deploy it up. So in order to do this, I'm going to run Visual Studio. Visual Studio needs to be run in administrative mode to get the Azure stuff going, because what it's going to do is it's going to kick off the cloud for us and deploy to the little local cloud. It needs administrator privileges to do that. So I'm going to come in here, and I'm going to do File New Project. And I'm going to take a Windows Azure cloud service. We'll call this Lauderdale Cloud. Oh, I guess I was practicing last night. Lauderdale Cloud 2. And we can come in here, and here's our basic cloud service project. So I'm going to add in an ASP.NET web role. I'm going to come over here, and we'll just rename it to our Lauderdale web role. This will confuse all the guys from Redmond that are watching. They'll be like, we thought this was the Miami event, and we're still coaching them on where Miami and Lauderdale start and stop. But one day, we got this dang maps thing that's really cool. But badges cost me 2 points on my year-end review. All right. Now, we got a geospatial expert in the house, too. Yeah, really. We start doing that, they get mad. So this looks interesting. We got two projects by default in a simple web app here. The first one is our cloud container. So we have multiple roles in here. We had a WCF, we had a QWatcher, we had a ASP.NET thing. You'd see multiple roles sitting under here. And then what we have is this Lauderdale web role. Hey, Joe, I see a web config, I see default ASPX, I see, that looks pretty much like a web application, normal web application, except for this one thing, this web role. And we go in there and we see points where we can act on the start and stop of our actual web role. A place you might use this is to say we're going to be using Azure Table Storage, and we need to make sure a certain structure is created in there before we use it. We could use this to check and see if the structure is created before we ever go with it. Now, at this point, I've got default ASPX. So I come in here, and let's see. Here's my brilliance encoding, response.write, Lauderdale is to Miami like Bellevue is to Redmond, right? That'll wake them up. All right. And we're just going to write that out to the page. And I am in C sharp, thank you much. And then I'll just do this one, system.diagnostics.trace.writeline. Hello, Lauderdale. At plus now system dot date time dot now dot to string. All right, so two brilliant pieces of code from me. All right. Now, what I want to do is I want to run this against my local cloud. So I'm going to do a debug go. Now, watch this area right down here. I guess you can't do that in live meeting. Oh, well. Watch this area right down here. Oh, there it goes. All right. There we are. Right here. Because what's going to happen is you're going to see the cloud little dev environment kick off. So we come up. I hit debug go. And there's our little area. And we see development fabric is shut down. Development storage is shut down. Spinning up. Come on. Go back over it. Dev storage started. Yay. All right. Dev fabric is started. Yay. All right. Now we can get rid of the little escape. But what's happened now is my cloud environment spun up. It should kick off this app for us. You see it's on 127.0.0.1. 81. Default ASPX, we're good there. We can come over now, and I can go into my Azure space, and I can do Show Dev Fabric UI. And when I click on Lauderdale Web Role, I see this one running instance here. And we can expand out, and there's Hello Lauderdale at whatever. So that's the trace write line I'm doing. If if I come over here and I hit this 3, 4, 5, I come back down over to my DevFabric UI, you can see the messages pounding in there and going to the trace line. Now, maybe I want to spin up a couple more instances. I want to make sure that, someone might be playing with session incorrectly. I told them not to use session in this, and we know we're in a load balance scenario. You want to chase off after that. If we come in here to the service definition CFG, I can actually change my instances count. I will also show you how you can do that out of a menu. So we come over here and we go to the role, and we go into properties on the role. We can run in full trust, Windows Azure partial trust. We can change our instance count, so I'm going to spin up 2. VM size, remember I talked about how you could size your VMs? This was actually, in Orlando we had a great question. These guys go, look, for some of our application purposes, we're preloading like 500,000 records into memory and doing lookups on them. Can y'all handle that in Azure? So basically what they'd want to do is they'd want to figure out how much memory they're really using for those indexes, and they could set up their virtual machine size on the basis of their memory requirements. So you can also set up how many CPU cores you get and stuff like that. So pretty neat there. We'll leave it as a small VM. We're going to launch the browser for an HTTP endpoint when this kicks off. We can come in here. Someone was asking earlier about ports, HTTP 80. Great, you don't want to use 80, use something else. We can see local storage. We could put 509 certificates up in here. But that's basically how you configure that web role. Now when I run it, what I should see is in the app fabric, I should see 2 worker roles running. Launching the browser. Okay, so if I come down here to App Fabric, Show Dev Fabric UI, come over here, I tap on that, I can see my 2 areas kind of sitting there running. We see that it hit in this one area, so if I actually tap this one area, we can see that message go into there, but it didn't go in to the lower area. 2 separate web role instances. Now I come in. Let's do this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. All right. Go back. And let's see. It looks like they all went into the same instance. It's not stressed enough to do it right now, and it's trying to send it back to the same point because it's really the same browser session. And we come in here. And yeah, now we see it hit in the other one because it's a separate browser session. Did that answer it? Was it some load balancing? Yeah. So the question was, why am I even bothering with multiple instances? It's for load balancing. The real reason I'm doing it too in Azure is for failover, because if one of my instances hangs up in the cloud, I'll already have a second instance up and going. It's like if you're deploying a web farm. If you have a web farm environment, it doesn't make sense just to have one website running in your web farm. You always want to have at least 2 because things start going yucky on the first one. You just roll over the second, then you spin up that third one and shut down the first one. And that's what the App Fabric will take care of for you. Cool. Good question. Thank you. Anything else on this? Whoop, in the back. Whoop, way back there. So state's not natively supported in Azure, but if you go into CodePlex, there are a couple kits. There's a table state manager, and there's a SQL state manager up in CodePlex you can use. Results may vary. Check it out and make sure it works for you. All right. Yeah, you I can actually not see, so good yelling. All right. I don't even know if there's a maximum. What's the maximum number of sessions you could go to?
Sessions or servers?
Instances.
I don't know if there is necessarily an upward limit. I mean, I've seen.
You know, it's kind of like, so. I'm selling cars, and each time you buy a car, you're paying. I want to sell you as many as I can. No, you know, you're going to watch that. You don't just want to jam up arbitrarily, because when you spin up an instance, you're paying for that instance, and it's like 12 cents an hour. But the billing increments are 1 hour. So you're automatically going to get hit with that 12 cents when you spin up those multiple instances. Good question. So the question for those remote was, is there a multiple number of instances? And when we get off, I'll go look that up too. So, okay, you shut this down. Now, comes time, we've tested this application, we're happy with it, we're going to deploy to the cloud. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come over here, and I'm going to do a build publish Lauderdale Cloud. Now, a couple things happen. We'll come back to this website it's opening up, but first, it built a binary package of our application for us, and it also published out our configuration file. Here's the package. You can see it's 1.5 meg. If I come in and I rename this to a .zip file and open it up, there's a bunch of stuff in there that's really your application deployment. It's kind of like if you're using the .docx and you rename it to zip, you can open it up and see what's in it. We'll leave it at CSPKG. Then there's our configuration file as well. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to grab the URL here. And now it opened me up a website to the Windows Azure portal, and I need to sign into that. And got to log in. Oh, I didn't hit enter. Yes, I did, I guess, but all right. Chug it, chug it, chug it. If you wiggle the mouse, it goes faster. I used to work PC desktop support back in Windows 3.1 days, and that's what we tell the users who are complaining about boot times. It kept them busy. Of course, it was bad. One day, my boss walks through. He sees about three people out there wiggling their mice, and he's like, why are they doing that? And they all pointed at me, and I was like, oh, boy. All right, so we go to Windows Azure, and I've got a couple things already deployed out there. So what I'm going to do, we'll also see space up here for SQL Azure, App Fabric, stuff like that. But what I want to do is deploy a new Azure service up there. And I come in, and here is, I got a choice right here. I can create a storage area, or I can create an Azure-hosted service. I got 17 services remaining. And the service label here would be Lauderdale Azure. Skip the description for now. So this is the screen I'm using to push my application up into the cloud. Then we come in here, and this is interesting. It's going to create me. Remember when I showed Miami 3.1.1? It showed Miami311.cloudapp.net. So I can check for my availability. And where were y'all, Miami 3.1.1? So I know if I come in here, this better not be available at least. So we're checking availability for Miami 3.1.1. Not available. So maybe I'll come in and, hey, how about demo? What's scary is the other day demo was available.
Do you guys have any mechanism to check for someone trying to register a deliberate misspelling?
No. It's a domain up there. It's like just regular DNS. You're going to GoDaddy, you're doing a DNS entry. I would be checking it, if I had something up there, but the permutations of it. But all right, so demo's not available. We'll go J. Healy, Lauderdale. Now, if this one isn't available, we got a big surprise there. unless Brian's over here just slamming it out from under me. Then at this point, geo affinity, where do I want this to go? So I could go anywhere Asia, anywhere Europe, anywhere USA. I actually like to put them all in the same kind of area for reasons. One particular reason is if you're using SQL Azure and Azure applications, if you're inside the same little region, you're not going to get hit with data charges when you cross the boundaries. So what I actually did was I came down here and I set up a little geographic affinity group called Jay Healy's Affinity Group, and it always points over to South Central U.S. So we're going to use that one. Yeah, if you cross geographical boundaries on regions here, there are micro charges on ingress and egress data, and it's like 0.00 something cents per gigabyte.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can get out there and in the pricing you'll see that, but yeah, it's you know, it's basically like network bandwidth charges. But that's where when you're architecting, you lay out and you think about, you know, can we put our applications that are going to be working together? Can we put them inside the same regional area? Now, when we do this, what we wind up with here is our little Lauderdale Azure demo area. I have a production area and a staging area. I'm going to go ahead and, let's just deploy right to production. Because that's a best practice, right? Not. I'm sure someone on Twitter is flaming me. He deployed it right to production. All right. But we're really on this one. So I put in the URL where my files were. I go ahead and I pick up the cloud package. And then I'll come over here and I'm going to pick up the configuration file. And our name here is going to be version 1. And we'll deploy that. Now, here's where it gets you. It's going to come up in a minute. Maybe. And it'll say, typically this takes 50 seconds to do. It's lying. Because this is our first deployment. So I want you to think about what we're doing here. First, we're pushing an application up to the cloud. It's going to spin up multiple virtual machines for us. All right, that might take a few seconds. Second thing is, we just created a new DNS entry that's jhealylauderdale.cloudapp.net. Now, who can tell me the exact amount of time it's going to take to replicate to the DNS on this AT&T hotspot that we're using up here? That's about the answer I expected, yeah. 50 seconds to 2 weeks. We're dealing with DNS. So a lot of times that URL isn't immediately available. So there's some stuff you can do. Well, I'm going to show you an app I've already got deployed out while this thing's doing its magic. So I'm going to go back and I'm going to go to windows.azure.com. It should give me a little sign-in area. And if I go into Windows Azure, and I open up my little work area, and I go into DFLO Cloud, it's going in, it's taking a look, it's opening up the service that I've already got deployed out. So what we've got here is we've got 1 year old that's dfloCloud.cloudapp.net. So if I run that, give me my app. Where'd you go? There we are. There's DFLO Cloud. And you did this the other day. All right, stop. So basically when I do this, what I'm doing, it's interesting, I'm dumping out my cloud ID up there, I'm dumping out my IP of the cloud, I'm dumping out my HTTP endpoint, so that's the endpoint with the IP running in the cloud. There's my machine name, which eerily enough matches cloud, right, makes sense. I got my operating system level, I got my Windows directory, system directory, current directory, user domain name and username. Those are just base machine Windows environment variables that I'm dumping out. Now, I've also got a staging one. Remember I talked about you could deploy out into staging? Now, it doesn't run on dfhellocloud.cloudapp.net. What it does run on is some random GUID.cloudapp.net. So I'm able to deploy up into staging and see how that works. And then when I want to switch the two, because someone decided the white background's better than the black background, I hit this button right here. Are you sure you want to swap production deployment? And it's going to swap my production deployment. Now, when they say this takes 50 seconds, roughly, this one's not lying 90% of the time. It will switch your stuff out, and you'll have your staging moved in over your production URL just like that. Yes. Absolutely. Yep. And, of course, on the backside, you're checking things in and your version control, doing all that goodness. A couple guys, there's some good documents out there on, like, using 2010 TFS build to do automatic staging deployments and things like that. There's a lot of things you could do along those lines, but this is your basic stuff. So now look at that. We just switched these out. So what I ought to see here is the ugly white one. And we come over here, and on the staging now is the style sheeted one. Everyone get out of that work. Yeah, it's yay, he didn't blow up. Yay. Those of you who have seen my demos before, I know we fly by the seat of the pants. All right. So we come over here to SQL Azure, just showing you some of the other areas in there. SQL Azure, Brian's going to get into this, but I've built out a little SQL database in here. I actually didn't want to show that, but yeah, we'll take it. And it just comes up. Again, this is where you configure and set up. Eventually it comes up. Works faster. Brian's watching YouTube videos over the AT&T. All right. You know, I got a master and hands-on test database. This is really about what you can do with databases up there. The rest of it's command line driven. If we go back to Azure, I want to show you the storage area I've got set up in there. And there's Jay Healy's demo storage. And we will see cloud storage. We'll see some endpoint URLs. Those of you on the internet snapping my primary access key, I'm going to change it shortly after this. Those of you in the crowd who can remember it, you're my heroes. We got basic endpoints for demo storage type stuff. So you can see you got your three basic cores right there. Also got an app fabric area, and I'm not currently using that, but this is where you set up things, configure things, deploy things as far as the apps go. Really kind of a straight up drill at that point. Well, you could deploy an app, or you could use an on-premise app, right? It's just a SQL server at that point that's in the cloud that you're going to hit via connection string. Question was, if once you deploy a SQL server, do you got to do anything special to get your apps to it? No, it's just an app. It's just a big SQL server in the sky. All right, so what we can see, this was our Lauderdale web role. We deployed it out. I could run it. It would start it up. We got a URL out there for it, a deployment ID, but it's not running at this point. Now, this is interesting. It's up there, but it's not running. So the guys in Redmond have given us a very nice warning message. While your deployment is stopped, it will continue to accrue charges. So the idea here is the hotel room idea. You've just booked a hotel room for at least 1 hour. But that really sounded bad. I gotta rework that analogy, don't I? Those of you in the remote audience, I'm just not repeating the heckling that I'm getting on that one. It's the hotel room analogy. You book the room. Until you're out of that room, you're paying for it. So if I were to rip this down, if I were to delete it, then I'm no longer paying for it. But I like poor Ed Pechikera up in Redmond to stress because I'm chewing into his I.O. code, so we're going to run it for at least the rest of the session. Having some fun there. All right, but any questions on the basic Visual Studio deployment, setting up the app, getting it up there, that kind of thing? Well, there's a couple of stages, actually, you can do that. The question was, and I fully understand where you're going with this, I think, but when I release that service, does it totally knock out this cloud app URL that I just struggled so hard to get? So maybe you're mad at the Port of Miami 311 guy, and you're watching for that thing to float out of DNS. Then you're going to create your own cloud app and grab it and blackmail them to get it back. So what you want to do is you don't want to rip the domain down. So you can rip the application out and delete out the application, but it's going to leave that service name intact, and that service name is what's parked on that URL. That help? Yeah. So be very cautious about that, especially if you got a production cloud app .NET thing that's sitting out there, and you want that to just stay yours, and you're worried about somebody poaching it out from under you. Obviously, if it's your thing, if someone grabs Miami 311 out from under Miami, I think we'll get that resolved pretty quick on our side. But, God forbid we get lawyers involved in something. So, that's a support issue, too, if you think someone poached. Cool. Anybody else? Sir? Yep. Okay, let me log in.
I'm going to show that.
All right, Brian's going to show it because actually myworldmaps.net is a custom domain, and he's going to show us all about that too. But it's basically on that setup screen. There's a little CDN custom domain deal at the bottom. You have to set up your own domain and do your CNAME record and those kind of things. And if nobody understands what I just said, I think the IT server group is out there, and they know all this stuff, too. So if you need help setting up DNS, we can call in our brother IT pros to bail us out there.
I've got a question on SQL Azure. Why would you have more than one instance of your SQL database in the cloud?
First off, you probably wouldn't, but we maintain high availability failover backups. So it's a high availability cluster. So everything's automatically replicated across the cluster. It's SQL Enterprise. Yes, absolutely you could. If in that wiki I showed you. What?
Repeat the question.
Oh, thank you. The question was, could you have multiple databases spread across geographical areas for performance? Absolutely. There's a good session at the PDC on sharding, and it's available online, but that's a strategy for tiering your databases out. Geography definitely plays a big role in that, but it makes sense that you would do that. Very back. I hit Control L and look at indexes and stuff like that. Measure millisecond response times. Look at performance plans. What?
Repeat the question.
See your foot? See my leg? You're allowed to kick me when I don't.
That's what I'm gonna start doing. So every time you see Joe twitch, that was me physically telling him.
Get a room for 1 hour. Yeah, great. Thanks. So the question was, what do you do for performance tuning? Basically, you can look at your query plans and stuff like that. You can see where you're missing on the indexes and things, and you can run your benchmarks against it. A lot of the tools that are there in Management Studio you can still do. Pass through to SQL. That one goes good. Good shot. I got kicked. When you load out the div fabric, it's basically you're asking about. You have to load out your own SQL. You got to have a SQL server going on local if you want to pretend like you're talking to a SQL server. So SQL Express will work good in that instance. Still got you. Yep. Is there a downtime while you're doing the swap? There shouldn't be. But realize when you're doing the swap, it's going to run on the old until the new one's absolutely ready to go, and then it's going to hit the new one. Sir? Yep. Yeah. So what? I'm sorry? without any problem. Yes, it's 80. The question was, Al, good shot again. Bill, if you're on the call, this is workers' comp now. All right. No, the question was, so he's using any framework. How's that going to work? It's just 3.5 SP1 and any framework. It's running in the cloud. It's going to work good. Unless you were doing something like hitting geospatial or some barred thing, right? But it's just any framework. You know, no problems there. I haven't tried in Hibernate in the cloud. I'd actually like to look that up. So, you know, pop me an email, jhealy@microsoft.com, or some of you online guys who are there, pop me it because you guys are all got your email open. So, all right. If I were going to deploy a Java-based application in the cloud, I'd do what? It'd be similar to deploying PHP. Basically, you got to enable native code execution. You got to put your little Java servlets into that package. You bundle it up and go with it. You saw in my wiki under Azure General where I had the Eclipse tools. There's some good walkthroughs in there about doing Java apps in the cloud. Also, email me separately, and I'll see if I can find you more resources if that doesn't help you. But that wiki, just search on Java in there, and you'll find some Java links. And Java tools, Java Azure tools for Eclipse is probably where you want to go. Sir? No. So the question was, see, I got there before your foot.
My foot was back and ready.
So the question was, is there a way to update just one file? Because we're web guys, right? The CSS is crappy. Let's just sneak the CSS file right in without doing full production build and deploy. No. Because what's happening is that application package is what's distributed across your web farm up there. So you need to redeploy the whole package up there.
What I recommend people do, and we'll get into this later on in the next session talking about Azure Data Storage, but if you have frequently updated files, say a CSS file or a JavaScript file or really anything, you would leverage Blob Storage for that, and you'd put the file in there and then pull that in through your application. So,
nasty little trick, pretty cool, though, right? The main thing you can do with updating your application on the fly if we come in here is you can change the number of instances and anything that's in the CFG service CFG file. So it'll let you edit your configuration file on the fly, but you can't really just upload single files. So we can come in here, like into a DF Hello Cloud. And we come down here, and you see configure. So I can go into configure there. And this is pretty much the extent you can make to a running application, unless you're using the hit me super sneaky way. So you can see there's that same configuration. There's my instances count. Guess how you scale an application up. You change it to 20. Boom, I'm going to have 20 instances running up there. You can change your connection strings, stuff like that, and off you go. Great questions, all right? Way in the back again. The angry admin row. You don't have partitioning, so you don't have to do partitioning. Question was, I saw the foot coming. The question was, how would you do like partitioning in production? Well, you don't have partitioning on this. There's no partitioning. So you do have sharding, and sharding is a physical database thing. So, yeah. If it's running, yeah, I think you can do show stats and stuff like that. You can get up there, and there's a number of commands that you can issue that are normal database commands up there. Running third-party tools up there, not yet, but you can get in there and issue standard DBA-type stored procedures, then investigate what's going on. If it's running slow because you didn't create indexes, you're not going to, you know. But if it's just running like junk and you can't figure out why, yeah, I'd open the support instance with Microsoft and, yeah. Yeah, no, I would absolutely open it. If it's an Azure problem, I won't say 100% they're not going to bill you, but, you know, if there's a problem with Azure, they're probably not going to bill you. And don't forget with your MSDN, you get some free support incidents in there as well, so you could run on that.
So talking specifically about SQL Azure there, you still will have the same index as you would offline in a, say, an on-premise SQL server. You can maintain those. You can rebuild them via commands. So you can still do all that yourself. The tooling isn't quite as rich yet to do it, but through code you can, and script, you can do most of that. But I'd recommend we keep the SQL Azure questions until the SQL Azure part of the talk, because I think that'll help.
Okay. Yep. And the other thing, I'm just looking to see if I put any performance tuning links in here. No, it's all mostly just general stuff. All right. Okay, cool. Yeah, and we do have a whole talk on SQL Azure coming up, so this will be a good dialogue. All right, yeah, wrapping up real quick, developer experience, Visual Studio, Go. You got Eclipse supported, Ruby, Python, PHP. Enjoy it. So that's pretty much it for the intro to Azure.